interest in seeing how this comes down. And I guess it's not of anybody, if anybody got any.
I think anybody wanted to comment on that, please, right, yeah. Let's start with Mr. Bjornstad and then Ms. Keith and then anybody else.
Again, I'm Gene Bjornstad, Chugach Electric. The topic of unbundling, I think, needs to be understood in a couple different ways. There's one way to look at it, and that's unbundling your financial records. So as Senator Sharp suggests, you can account for the costs of the different parts of your business. Now, this isn't a topic that just come up in the last couple weeks. Those of you who have followed the industry for a couple of years, it's a topic that people have been suggesting that a utility does. And Chugach has embarked on this over a year and a half ago, and we have, in fact, segregated our financial accounts into generation, transmission, distribution services, and retail services. And so we can project what it is it's going to cost somebody for a kilowatt of electricity. Now, there's another way of looking at it. You're talking about unbundling and separating the entire parts of the business into individual entities. That, again, is a different way of looking at unbundling. I don't know whether that's what you had in mind, but we don't think it's that expensive. Now that we've done it, you have to set up your accounting system. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of people internally to set it up, and then you have to train your workers and your workforce to put their time in the right boxes and so forth. And what investments you make in it, obviously you're going to change those indicators or those allocators over time. I guess I would propose that you could probably update these figures probably every couple of years. It'd be something that we'd submit to the commission for approval, and then anybody who uses our transmission system would pay the same price as we would charge ourselves. Same thing with the distribution system. I think that's the way you do it.
Ms. Pease.
Yes, Mary Ann Pease. Just expanding briefly on what Mr. Bjornstad has said, for example, MLMP has about 24 miles of transmission line and approximately 350 miles of distribution line. That does not change substantially. Once you get a good base to work from, which I think already exists, the amount of new transmission lines that's being added is negligible over the next few years, and the amount of new distribution line, again, is not that great. It's if there's a major change in the system, the distribution, the transmission system, that the cost of study would have to be redone and those numbers recalculated. So I don't see there's that big of an issue. And again, once you get the work base, an update every 2 or 3 years should be sufficient.
Don Winnell, on behalf of MLMP, I think actually Senator Sharp is onto a very good problem. The Telecommunications Act, by way of analogy, was passed in February of 1996. Core issues about pricing are now finally before the Supreme Court of the United States are unresolved at this time. Accounting systems account for cost, investment, expense, that sort of thing. What they don't do traditionally is allocate to services, particularly when the services aren't themselves unbundled. So the existing mechanisms do not actually address the question of how shall we price a particular service, which we have never provided before, and how shall it be collected. The question of identification of costs, particularly what economists call joint and common costs, the allocation of those costs is extremely important. It would be a natural inclination for any entity which has a choice to allocate costs where consumer response is least elastic, where consumers have to pay for it. I include now as consumers potential users of the transmission system. There's a second problem in that cost allocated towards or away from, for example, generation will impact stranded investment. Stranded investment becomes quickly other people's money, and it may prove to be a managerially adept approach to try and load up generating costs for recovery from a third source, if you can improve your competitive position elsewhere in the marketplace. So it is not simply a matter of reforming an accounting system. I have no doubt that Chugach Electric has done so in good faith, but to restructure an industry where the owners of all segments, it's generation, transmission, and distribution are recovering a reasonable profit, or at least have a reasonable opportunity to recover a reasonable profit, which is what the law requires. And nonetheless, to present costs which are competitively neutral, you do want competition to occur as a result of this entire thing. It is not so simple an activity. Telecom is proving that. And I think you will find similar levels of detailed allocation problems in the electric system. It is something that you ought to consider, and I think it's quite correct.
Yes, Bruce Scott, MEA. Senator Sharp also addresses quite pointedly the question that came up with fairly. How do you fairly account for these costs? Chugach Electric Association proposed to serve some of MLMP's customers and said Chugach will pay X amount to ship the electricity along MLMP's lines, and we have determined this is the fair value, and that's what we're going to pay. The MLMP, I understand, disagreed with that assessment, but the APUC, in order U97-201, rejected Chugach's attempt to serve MLMP's customers. And, of course, now we have another proposal before the commission, yet another group. But identifying the costs fairly, well, if I'm trying to tell you what the costs are for Chugach to ship us power, I'm going to weight it as much as I can on our side. I mean, that's natural inclination. Of course, I personally would never do that because I'm an honest and forthright businessman. But the inclination industry-wide is going to be for whatever business is doing the valuation to try and shave the numbers, if you will, to benefit them as much as possible. So it's not going to be an easy matter to determine exactly what is the cost is or what portion of that.
I have a follow-up on this, yes. I'd like to direct this a follow-up to Mr. Ornquist. I think that this issue is central to our charge if we agree to recommend to legislature that you take this up. Then I think it's our duty in terms of policy setting to give the APUC enough, as much direction as possible, keeping it as simple as possible, but to avoid the complexities of the issue, to give you some direction so you don't have to make the decisions, nor, and also to avoid as much litigation it might be generated from it. But in so doing, do you think it would be appropriate for the legislature to at least make a broad brushed policy statement as to which stranded embedded costs, how this is to be done, the level of burden, and what could be put into a ultimate formula on a narrative type form statutorily to give you direction? Do you think that would be a good idea?
Dwight Ornquist from the Public Utilities Commission. I think it would be good for the legislature to give us a very broad directive, something on the order of take care of stranded costs appropriately. And the reason I say that is because we will be running into issues that we haven't considered, and as slow as the APUC is to deal with things and change, if a mistake is made somewhere along the line, it's even more difficult generally to address it at the legislative level. The legislative level should give us good long-distance targets, and we should try to find the best method of attaining the target that the legislature has set. The actual complexity of unbundling and determining what is and isn't stranded investment, that will be determined a lot by the form of the new structure if we do restructure, which we haven't even determined yet. We're still at the stage of saying, should we do anything? And if so, what would happen? Any direction from the legislature at this point, especially, I think, should not be too detailed. But if more detail needs to be added in, then add it in later.
Well, then, Mr. Ornquist, how long is it going to take the APUC to define what stranded costs are? About 3 years?
Dwight Ornquist, Public Utilities. I don't think so. I've recently become the chairman on the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissions Finance and Technology Committee, and one of the things I've asked for at this last meeting we had was to come up with a good definition of stranded investment that would also reflect our situation up here in Alaska. I would imagine that the study that we're talking about, once we begin the process to coming out with the full study, should probably take a couple, 2 or 3 months, and we should have the information. Probably one of the biggest helps that we could receive is in the area of prioritizing. If the legislature were to say, we want to see you address this quickly, then that would speed up our processing a lot. Right now, we find ourselves dealing with a lot of different issues with a lot of different industries. And sometimes the important stuff gets put off a little bit because the urgent stuff is right in front of us. The burning issues are right there on the daily basis. So we do try to follow direction well. If the legislature said hurry up, I'm sure we would respond well to that.
Well, I suppose my concern is if we're too broad a brush, then if you make decisions, that would invite litigation, and that's, I guess, there's got to be a balance there somewhere. And Mr. Bjornstad, go ahead.
Mr. Bjornstad, Chugach Electric, I think you're going to hear in about a week or two, or I guess a couple weeks at your meeting on the 18th, you're going to have, I think Arica has hired an expert to come out and talk about this situation up here. And one of the things he talks about in his book is stranded investment. Classifies them in three areas: generation, contracts, long-term wholesale contracts and fuel contracts, and regulatory assets. I would submit to you there's probably some of all those three in this area up here. I think you probably can talk to that person when he gets here.
Any further questions on this line of questions? Representative Davis, do you have a question?
Comment on the last discussion a little bit. I think in the issue of broad versus narrow, it's generally better for the legislature to stick to the broad side. And with respect to these kinds of issues, there, I believe that they will be, if they need to be litigated, they will be litigated in any case, no matter how detailed we try to make our instructions. So I'm always inclined to set broad policy and let the experts wallow in the details. I have some detailed questions. My concern are generally along the lines of reliability, things like spinning reserve. How do you know when you have a wide open, free wheeling marketplace? How do you fairly allocate the costs for making sure that there is redundancy, making sure that there is the ability to respond and to respond quickly in our situation when it's 50 below? Do you allow the possibility for a supplier to just walk away? What are the contractual penalties for that? What are the legal ramifications? You know, it can become, the provision of electricity in our market can be a life and death issue. And those are the kinds of concerns I bring to the discussion. I'd like to hear some discussion about how can we assure our customers, if we were to go into a more competitive environment, that those kinds of concerns would be dealt with.
Mr. Scott.
Bruce Scott, MBA. I don't know how many of you have been following news from Laura 48 about the weather patterns down there. There's been a huge heat wave going on there. They've been running low on electricity, particularly in areas where they've had more competition, if you will, in areas they had previously.
and they have been able to come up with the electricity that they've needed. Unfortunately, the price has gone through the roof. Now, I've heard of people paying phenomenal costs for a megawatt hour of electricity. I don't know, $7,000 for a megawatt hour of electricity. What's an average cost of electricity?
We were given
$50, yeah. And, I mean, you're providing it. So the question then becomes, well, yeah, sure, you can provide it, but at what cost? And what guarantees do you have that it's not going to be some sort of gouging or, you know, market-based gouging, if you will, after the fact? I don't know how you do that. If somebody is marketing electricity and trying to make a profit off of it, they're more inclined to be selling electricity and making the profit than they are trying to figure out how to keep the customers online all the time. That's not their priority. Our priority in the MEA is not to sell the electricity to make money. I mean, that's important for us to do that, or we'd be out of business. But our first priority is to keep the lights on. If the lights aren't on, we don't have any customers, we don't do any sales, you know, we're just out of business. If somebody else doesn't keep the lights on, well, yeah, they're losing some money. But later on, when the lights come back on, someone else fixes the problem, and they can go ahead and make some more money on the deal. So when you have that kind of area of competition, I don't think you have the commitment that you have in a case where it's a member-owned cooperative or even municipal cooperative where the voters, the members, are depending upon you to keep them from shivering when it's 50 degrees below zero. I don't know how you provide for backup in a competitive marketplace other than to say, well, they're my customer when I'm making a dollar. When I'm not making a dollar because the temperatures drop too far, they're your customer.
My concern is there may not be somebody over there to hand it to this John Davies. I'd like to hear from some more people on this issue.
Ms. Peter.
Mary Ann Peter, Aurora Tower. The ancillary services that go along with the distribution and generation of power will be purchased just as they are today. The system's reliability should not change one iota. We supply natural gas to over 700 customers, and never has one of those customers been without heat in the wintertime because of the competitive marketplace. It just doesn't happen. The same reliability issue that are associated with natural gas would be applied to electricity, the same ones that exist today. In order to purchase power, any power arrangement that is done to a power marketer, a utility affiliate, or anybody else for that matter, would have to meet stringent qualifications and have the same spinning reserves, load following, and ancillary services that are provided today on the existing system.
Can I follow up on that? What is the mechanism for providing, since if you're a reseller, you have no spinning reserves, ancillaries, so you have to purchase them, and they
right.
would be contractual requirements of this
That's
selling
absolutely
arrangement?
Right. Okay. Absolutely correct. And if I could follow up on that, in the discussions that I have had with Chugach, every single one of the conversations that we've talked about the ability to purchase power from Chugach, it's been a complete package with all the other ancillary services that go along with it, such as load following,
but Ms. Pease, that if you want to draw an analogy to natural gas, you also have to have a spinning reserve equivalent to natural gas too. Do you know? You have to have a excess of capacity for a high demand period.
That's correct. The peak demand in the wintertime.
Right, and if it's my understanding, if we don't have to bring new gas online, that we're going to have a shortage of gas in the Cook Inlet area in a few years. I mean, there's that theory, right?
Right. But that has been brought about by competitive forces, which we're talking about here, and the reliability of the system. That's like a natural resource decline.
I know. To say that it hasn't happened in natural gas, I won't belabor the point. Scott, you got something?
Yeah, Bruce Scott, I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, though, to compare natural gas reliability to electrical reliability. I mean, how many trees fall over on natural gas lines causing power outages? 90% of the power outages that MEA has are caused by trees falling on our lines. Another 5% are caused by squirrels or birds committing hara-kiri. This doesn't happen to a gas supplier. Now, gas is there, it's reliable. Sure, in an earthquake, you're going to have a problem. Now, so will we. But most of our power outages are caused by other factors. And who's going to send the linemen out there? You have to have contracts in place for that. If MEA is sufficiently damaged by having competition, I'd say this would happen, but if we were, maybe we haven't got the money to have people out there to repair the lines as quickly as before. Maybe we don't have them at all. Who's going to do it?
Mr. Rehnquist, then Ms. Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Dwight Ornquist, APUC. Regarding these issues that Representative Davies brought up, first of all, we do still have oversight of entry and exit in this industry. That means that a provider cannot just pick up and walk up and not serve anymore. We have certain standards for service and safety that have to be met by all providers. And as far as covering the costs of those issues and the issues that are that fall upon the infrastructure, let's say, those are currently allocated among all the customers, and they would continue to be allocated among all the customers. The spinning reserves are paid by all the customers. The end, keep in mind, the end customer is the one that's paying all the bills no matter what. And the idea is to make sure they pay for their share, no more, no less, and make it as accurate as possible. We currently do all those things. We just do them with fewer companies and in a little different manner right now because of the structure of the organization and the industry.
I'd like to pass. I was going to bring up the oversight of the APUC. Mr. Ornquist has done that.
But I would like to add one point. Commissioner Ornquist is correct when he talks about public utilities. They do control the entry and exit of utilities and the conditions of service, but Aurora has asserted in its application that it is not a public utility. It does not require to get a certificate of public convenience. If that is true, it seems to me under free market principles, one of the most basic principles is free exit. Anytime you want. You own your facility, you are not subject to regulation, exit, that sort of market condition. I think that goes to Mr. Davis' question about longer-term reliability. If these people can come and go at will, and they think they can, what happens to their customers? That's the real question.
It speaks with universal services, right? Ms. Pease, do you have a rejoinder?
Yes, Marianne, thank you for our power. In response to that last statement, the presentation that we gave to the Public Utilities Committee, the very issue came up. And Aurora Power, even though in the application we said that it wouldn't be necessary to have any sort of a certificate for a public utility as we currently exist today because we don't own any generating assets of any kind, we would be more than happy to subject ourselves to some sort of market certification. And that is addressed in the application as well, where the APUC would have to certify anyone entering and exiting the market so that they wouldn't just leave on a whim. That is not our intent by any stretch of the imagination.
Very good. Great question. Representative
Davies. Can I have just follow up and ask one other question?
Sure.
If in that kind of a circumstance where there was some sort of market certification, what would be the impediment to just exit? I don't know how that mechanism works. Could Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Ornquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dwight Ornquist, APC. There are two things to consider there. Some utilities will be facilities-based. I think everybody here represents or works with facilities-based electric utilities here, except for Ms. Pease. If you're a facilities-based utility, then that's where a lot of the reliability lies. And facilities include all the infrastructure, and then we move over into the generation side of it. Non-facilities-based entities probably wouldn't have much impact if they exited easily, because the facilities would remain there, the service would remain there, the generation would be there. They wouldn't notice it if their bill would come from somebody else suddenly. But as far as, and if one of those entities wished to exit quickly, we probably would say, find somebody to supply your customers and everything's okay with the same price. And one of the mechanisms we would use for that would be perhaps bonding a they would have to provide a bond of a certain amount to be sure that that any cost could be covered. We would use that bond. We've implemented that technique with some of the telecommunications companies, and it seems to work okay.
Steve, did you have a comment? No, okay. Excuse me. Eric and then Gene.
Eric Ewell, Eureka. I guess a question for the commissioner then is, why was an entity that was facility-based by the name of Alaska Power Systems so easily allowed to leave the state of Alaska without any kind of rejoinder by APUC?
White Orange with APUC, we have a docket on that and are working on all that right now.
And who pushed you into that document?
Well, I'm not really able to discuss a whole lot in it, just like judges and can't talk about open cases, but it was, as far as procedure, that was at the, we opened that document at the complaint of the utility, and then we addressed it, or are addressing it.
Yeah, and who's the supplier of last resort in a rural area, then, if there's a failure?
This is Dwight again. The supplier of last resort is probably a separate issue, and that's certainly something that does have to be addressed, and how it's addressed is something that we have more than one option on. Coming up with which option we wish to use would be part of the process. Picking the way right now would not be a good way to go until the studies are.
Gene, you had a question.
Yeah, I guess I don't want to change the direction of discussion here, but I just want to make a comment on the figure that's been talked about and what happened in June down in the lower 48 with the shortage or the high prices on electricity. I think there's another point of view, and I don't claim to know all the details down there, but another point of view, at least some people say, is that's an indication that the market was working. There was a shortage of supply and a high demand, and the price went up. Unfortunately, it went way up a lot more than people thought it was going to be, but I think if you look at what's happening down in other parts of the world, that is a situation of competition. I'm not suggesting $7,000 a megawatt hour, but I think the other point you'll find is that these costs are probably going to be paid by the investors and not the consumers, because I think the regulatory agencies are not going to allow that cost to be passed on to consumers.
Questions of the committee? Or Ms. Story, come comment.
Can I make just one comment on that?
Sure.
In most of our cases, the people who are the investors and the holders of this are the consumers themselves. The consumers end up paying that.
Yeah, that was Norman Story from before my electric. Representative Davies.
I guess that's a good segue into my other question is, I noticed that in many of the other states where they pass legislation that there is a provision that allows cooperatives to opt out on their own decision making. How would people feel about that kind of a provision in the state of Alaska, and what would be the impact on the development of competition here, where we have a situation where, depending on how you calculate it, 65% to 85% of the capacity is cooperatively owned.
Mr. Hornquist, Commissioner Hornquist, go ahead.
Dwight Hornquist, APC. Representative Davies, that would probably cut it off right at about the knees. I look around and the bulk of the area where competition would probably show the greatest benefit, I believe, is served entirely by municipals and co-ops.
But so you're presuming that they would opt out?
Presuming they would opt out, correctly.
Good question. Senator Sharp.
We're talking about X number load here. So many kilowatt hours. Just going to be split to different pies by other people coming in and taking some of the kilowatt hours. and marketing generation to serve these consumers who already exist on someone else's facilities. I guess what is going to keep, and we know in all probability that the drivers on this is going to be the very large industrial loads or commercial loads that are privately owned and probably not owned by Alaskans, that are very concerned about their bottom line. And so if they can shave a half a million bucks off their power bill, they don't care who eats it. You know? And so the utility ends up with a half a million dollars less in profits to meet their obligations. And you multiply this times 10% on the pilot project, or it's not a pilot project, it could be larger depending on the type of large accounts that individual utilities have. If individual utilities has four accounts that makes up 50% of their load, it could be disastrous. And what then is the commission going to do to protect the residential account from utility filing a rate case that says, hey, we got to raise our rates because we can't make it. But the profit, the savings goes to the other supplier and to the large commercials. I don't see where there's going to be a clamoring to serve a residential that uses 500 kilowatt hours or 600 kilowatt hours unless the utility commission forces that onto them as a percentage based on that utility's percentage of residential accounts, total kilowatt hours, and so forth. But still, that's a tough sell. How do you protect the Alaskan resident that's sitting here 12 months out of the year and doesn't have a bottom line to worry about? He's worried about stretching a paycheck.
That's
the profit's going to two people, two concerns. One, to the supplier, and to the large commercial account that affects his bottom line. And they're still the same pie, just being splittable differently.
Mr. Commissioner, you want to...
Dwight Ornquist, APUC. Boy, there are a number of things there. The first of all, what happens is I right now we establish rates. We establish rates for the large consumer. We establish rates for the small consumer. If we have a situation that the large consumer is subsidizing the small consumer, where the costs that are required, the costs incurred that are to serve that big consumer are over-recovered, and the costs for the small consumer are under-recovered, I don't know of it, because right now the whole idea of regulation is to make sure that those costs are adequately and accurately assessed. We talk a lot about the big customers being more profitable. We talk a lot about nobody wanting the little customers. I'm not so sure that's necessarily the case. As an organization, would you make more money with one customer and selling a million kilowatt hours, or 1,000 customers and selling it a million kilowatt hours? A lot of debate that could go around that. If we've been regulating correctly, then it would be the same, because all the costs would be allocated appropriately, and they'd be paying what they should be paying for power right now. Unfortunately, I don't think we're that good. I think that what we find is the efficiencies that we can drive as a regulator are much like the efficiencies you might find working with your children, and you tell them to do something and watch them and they're doing it and go away, and maybe they'll do it, maybe they won't. Depends on your kids. I think we've got good utilities in Alaska overall. But then you compare that to the performance that you'll get when you're paying based on performance, and your child, instead of earning $5 an hour,
you say, do this work, and when you're done, I'll give you more, but I'll give you $100 to get this done, they'll probably get more done. I suppose I didn't have to use kids, but I'm in the midst of raising kids, so that comes to mind pretty fast.
Thank you, sir. The chair, excuse me.
Just one follow-up.
Sure, sure, sure.
That's all okay, but would the commission consider, and any of the other utilities consider, what some of the other states have done, if you want to be in the competitive retail market, you divest yourself of all your generation and it goes into a pool. Everybody gets to buy out of that pool. If you want to be competitive, let's get competitive.
Commissioner.
Thank you. My first cut, my theory at competition includes exactly what, well, very similar to what you're saying. First of all, the infrastructure should be regulated. I think that's something we don't want duplicated, and everybody needs to share the costs. Secondly, you've got the wholesale and retail pricing, and that's something that could be driven by supply and demand. And then you've got generation. Generation doesn't necessarily need to be regulated the same, but you have to have standards, service and safety standards. And I think all those three areas can be addressed with different, using different structures. So I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all there. I think those separations would be
the chair would like to recognize the Rocket Man representative, Alan Austin of Kodiak. Welcome, Alan. All right. Questions of the committee? I have a, for my own purposes of my educating myself and draft some of the members of the committee, could someone give them a definition of what the current federal and state universal service requirements are? And the reason I bring this up is that I recall last summer when I was in Cordova for the Eureka Convention to give a short speech on this, that took a ride out of one of the roads there, and there was this 3-mile underground buried cable to one house, and I'm going, who's paying for this? So there was a demand for the service. And it was an extremely expensive installation of underground cable for power. And so what is our current status and what we are mandated to do? Mr. Commissioner, could you answer?
Dwight Orquist, APC. Generally, the way it operates now is if you're in an area and it's in a service area of one of the utilities, you go in and say you want power. The way most of them work, that I'm aware of, is you get a certain amount to work with. You get up to, say, $3,000. They will put in toward building this line. Anything above that, you have to finance or pay for yourself. And then when it's done, you give it to the utility, and it becomes their property. And then a lot of times at that point, depending on the agreement they have, if anybody hooks up to that, you might get some money back for them hooking up. But the utilities generally pay a certain first X amount of dollars, and then the person wishing to be attached has to pay beyond that. Now,
is that a state or a federal requirement?
That's with us. That's the state. Well, actually, that's the way most co-ops have set it up and most utilities. It's not actually something we require, I don't think.
My question was, what are the state requirements and the federal requirements in universal service?
I don't know of any for electric. We have them for telecom, but I don't know of any for electric.
Could you verify that for the committee?
I'd love to. I'll have the agency.
Does anybody else have any?
As far as I know, there's Domino for MLMP. There is a very extensive universal construct in the Telecom Act of 1996. There is no equivalent construct in the Energy Act of 1992.
committee members.
Excuse me, Chairman, is it your intention to quit at 4:30?
Yes, it is.
And is it your intention that the committee itself have any discussion here about how we're going to proceed or anything at this meeting?
Not today, unless you have some questions or recommendations. We, in terms of process, we have the general public hearing on the 18th. I think after that, we should have, what I may do at that time, I'm going to discuss this with Senator Sharp, is to break the committee into some subcommittees after that period, because there are certain areas of this issue that perhaps we want to focus on. If we have a little bit of a division of labor, maybe we can make some more rapid headway. That's something we should discuss at our next meeting. And if anybody has any ideas regarding that, I'll be contacting the committee members. Mr. Kelliker.
Just a question, Mr. Chairman. When you have this public meeting, is it your intention that the utilities not rehash what we've done, but rather you want us there as a resource, you want us to stay away out in the crowd? What do you want to, what's your idea there so we can begin to prepare for that?
Well, I think that because it's a more limited period of time, I wanted to make sure that everybody else in the whole state had an opportunity to testify. And you are certainly all invited to testify also. But
yeah, I'm not pushing for that. I'm
right.
Asking what you want.
Well, I think that's appropriate, but if there's time available and we have the ability to do that and the committee has some questions, if you want to have yourselves or representatives attend or be on teleconference,
okay,
as resources if the committee has any questions.
That'd be
one reason I decided to schedule at that time. I thought some folks would be coming in here for the Eureka Convention in Wasilla, and those people that didn't have an opportunity to come or attend today or be part of this whole process, that would give them an opportunity, hopefully, if they could adjust their schedules to make an actual, to have testimony at that time. Because today was intended primarily for, and it was invitation only, so we could get the major players, if you will, to help educate this committee as to what the issues are, so we can decide what direction we want to go, even with our hearing and so forth. And I think we've done that today very admirably, frankly. And be wrapping up in a few minutes. And well, I do want to thank everybody for coming and participating. I know I've certainly learned a lot today, and we've got a couple more minutes because we do have an airplane to catch, so Gene, go ahead.
Yeah, Gene Bjornis, the Chugach Electric. This morning, Representative Dyson, I think, posed the question to me, or maybe others, about changes in technology in the next 5 or 10 years that might affect the industry. Chugach is involved in several fuel cell projects right now. You look at the economics of them, they make sense because there's some grants from the federal government, similar to what Golden Valley's got on the Healy coal plant. But I think fuel cells in the future are going to impact the industry. And I also think that if you read the paper, very small fuel cells. I think there was an advertisement I just saw just yesterday about a fuel cell that was you put in your house. The other technology that we probably need to be concerned about is microturbines. I think you're going to get a demonstration, or not a demonstration, but at least a presentation by a microturbine manufacturer at the Eureka Convention here in a couple weeks. Chugach is also looking into the microturbine. Those things are important, I think, because if a person puts one of those in his house, he probably doesn't need to rely very much on his local utility or a local power market or anybody else. It may mean that we're going to have to look at the industry differently. I think you find in the lower 48 there are also utilities getting into other lines of business. I know Chugach certainly is, and I know other utilities in this room are doing the same thing. One of the other promising things that we've heard about is the telecommunications world may be something that the electric utilities in the country are going to get concerned or involved in, because apparently there's some kind of process right now that you can use your electric conductors to transmit data. And apparently it's going forward in Europe, and we anticipate maybe we'll see that here in the next year or so. All those things are going to make us look differently at our customers and look differently at our organizations. And I think we don't know what's coming down the pike, but there's going to be changes whether we like it or not. And I think some of these things are going to require more competition rather than less.
Gene was talking about, and that is the Eureka Convention is going to be coming up.
Right.
It's going to be the week of the 18th. The primary program is on the 20th and the 21st, primarily on the 20th. Senator Murkowski is going to be with us as well, and I think the governor is going to be there having to do something with the transfers, Nettesham. Nevertheless, the theme of the conference is restructuring year 2000. And it is on everybody's mind in the electric utility industry. It is an opportunity for all of you all to get firsthand input from the boards of directors of all of the utilities, not just in the Rail Belt, but throughout the state, on how they feel about this issue and what concerns they have. And perhaps they're a little bit different from the concerns that you've heard from the management of the utilities here today. But as Gene mentioned, we're also going to have some technology people there as well. People that will be able to talk to us and are going to be a formal part of the program to talk about fuel cells, formally to talk about microturbines, and I think that we're even going to be talking about small tidal, are we not? So in addition to conducting a forum similar to this roundtable here with many of the same cast of characters so that my industry, my boards of directors, can hear all of the concerns from everybody here as well. But I'd very much like to encourage all of the members of this committee to attend. I know three of you have been able to find it within your busy schedules to accept and attend, and we would certainly love to see as many of you there as possible. But it'll be a good educational, good two-way educational process for everybody if you do come. One of the advanced seminar games that we're actually going to be playing is going to be called the deregulation game, and it's an all-day pro seminar where participants actually set themselves up as utilities and try and compete with each other. And it's a formalized program that has made quite a become quite popular amongst similar conventions in the lower 48, where you figure out, at least in a fun setting, how to compete with each other.
Eric, do you have the program agenda for time? So has that, I assume it's come to my office. I just don't.
Yeah, the answer is it has come to your office. And Mary, would you like to address that? I'm sorry. Mary Fisher of my staff, who, by the way, is a lady who's responsible for the bioacid science. She used to be the executive director of that.
In another lifetime. The programs have gone out, and another tentative agenda has just been released and is going out to most of the program participants days. I believe all the legislators on this committee will be getting that program within the few days. And I have talked to either you or your staff in the last few days about that. So it should be on your desk shortly.
I'd like to come to part of that. I don't think
it's there is the forum on restructuring is the morning of the 20th, which is a Thursday, is that correct?
That's correct.
At 9 a.m.? That there is a roundtable forum that we would participate in, and I would encourage all members of the committee if they have an opportunity. Representative,
is the meeting on the 18th going to be a teleconference?
Yeah.
Could I attend that?
Sure.
I'd be more
if you desire,
I'm on the
20th,
if I could do that other one.
Yeah,
I can't
that'd
afford
be fine.
3 days out of, you know, right. 5 days before the.
Right. Yeah. Does anybody else, Reverend?
Yeah, I think that MLMP is putting on a little summary
oh, that's right.
seminar
tomorrow
for those of us who need to learn more about the fundamentals of this industry and so on. And down at your office, 8:30 or something.
8:30 tomorrow morning.
And good coffee.
Good coffee and good lunch.
Fred, if you need a cleansing after that, come north. We'll give you a similar.
Now, Mike, we're going to come up to Fairbanks in September.
Yes,
there.
Right.
As long as Mira is plugging her coffee, I'd like to mention the MEA will have a hospitality suite at the Eureka meeting, and you're all invited to come by.
Great. Any further comments from committee members? I want to thank everybody very much for attending today. It was very informative, and I think we had a day well spent. With that, I would adjourn this meeting until the 18th of August at noon.